Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call's One Planet series. Tomorrow, voters in California and 13 other states will go to the polls to weigh in on the Democratic presidential race. While the environment was barely mentioned in the 2016 debates, climate change is now a major campaign issue for this year's presidential hopefuls and for voters. Several nationwide surveys show an increasing number of Americans are considering the climate crisis as one of their top priorities in the voting booth. A recent Pew Research poll found that climate change is second only to health care. According to the Yale Program on Climate Change Communication, between 2014 and 2019, the number of Americans alarmed about climate change has nearly tripled. It also found that 90% of Democrats think the U.S. government is doing too little on climate change. That is compared with 40% of Republicans. On today's One Planet series, we are continuing our coverage of the Democratic candidates by talking about their environmental records. The Center for Biological Diversity Action Fund evaluated each candidate on four issues: saving wildlife, protecting public lands, ensuring environmental justice, and ending the climate crisis. Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren are at the top with A's, and Amy Klobuchar is at the bottom with a D. Joining us to talk about their findings is Brett Hartle, Government Affairs Director at the Center for Biological Diversity Action Fund. It's a nonprofit focused on ensuring conservation is at the forefront of national policy. Hi, Brett. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Great to have you. We're also joined by Marianne Lavelle, an award-winning journalist for Inside Climate News, a Pulitzer Prize-winning nonprofit, nonpartisan news organization dedicated to covering climate change, energy, and the environment. Marianne has covered these issues for more than two decades, and one of her latest pieces is called Democratic Candidates Position Themselves as Climate Hawks Going into the Primary Season. Hi, Marianne. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, thanks so much.
Well, it's great to have you. Thank you. Let's start off by just talking about how things have really changed since 2016 in the debates and also among voters. A number of new research out there says that climate change is at the very top along with healthcare. Marianne, you cover these issues extensively. Just talk about some of the changes that we're seeing this time around.
Yes, it's so dramatic because climate never registered above the low, low single digits as a top voting issue. And now for many voters, it is their number one issue, and it is pretty consistently polling second to health care. We've kind of looked at some of the reasons for that. Of course, climate impacts are becoming more severe, as you know, in California. And the activists have been very aggressively talking about climate change and meeting with voters and talking about it as a voting issue and how important it is, not just to change your light bulbs, but really to be active in the political discussion over climate action. But I think that the third reason is Donald Trump himself. The president has just put into place this policy of absolutely ignoring climate and aggressively developing fossil fuels in the United States in the opposite direction we need to go in. And that has really galvanized a lot of people and woken up many people who care about this issue about how important it is to be engaged.
Brett, what would you add?
I think that's totally right. I mean, I think the two things I would add is just, you know, we're seeing it in a way that's so much more visceral in the last few years. The Amazon's on fire. Australia's on fire. California, you know, huge floods in the Midwest. You know, people are starting to really finally appreciate the severity of what's to come. But I think also, partly, again, in response to Donald Trump, there's a hunger, especially on the Democratic side, of having real plans and bold ideas as part of the discourse, which, you know, honestly weren't really there in 2016. And I think in this election cycle, people want to know the solutions and the specifics, and really are drilling deep into the details because they actually do matter.
Right. And Marianne, something you point out in one of your pieces is interesting. When you look at just the coverage that climate change failed to get in the last election, this time around, you point out that before the Iowa caucuses at that debate, you had the candidates bringing up climate change even though they weren't asked about it. So it's connected to so many other issues. As you point out, Bernie Sanders cited climate as the main reason he opposed Trump's free trade deal with Mexico. Elizabeth Warren said climate had to be part of a defense strategy. Joe Biden touted his role in heading up the largest investment ever in renewable energy. And at one point, one of the moderators said, we're going to get to climate change. So the candidates are really bringing this in, even when they're not specifically asked about it.
And notice how they're bringing it in. They are addressing climate change as integrated in foreign policy, in trade policy, in economic policy, in the case of Bernie Sanders, even in healthcare policy. And of course, climate is also a health issue, so that's absolutely true. So compare that to 2016. Donald Trump never had to answer a single question on climate change during that whole election cycle.
Wow. It never came up.
Never.
Wow.
And, you know, there was kind of a tangential energy sort of question at one of his forums with Hillary Clinton. But really, what will be interesting, I really think, this year is how he will address climate when he is finally faced with one of these Democrats, all who have pretty substantial plans. Even there are certainly differences among them, but all of them have a goal of net zero emissions by 2050, which is a remarkable change from 2016.
Hmm. Well, and Marianne, how are you going about writing about their records and their platform? Obviously, some candidates have much longer records than others, but talk about how you are going about doing that.
Well, one thing we thought would be interesting is to see what climate impacts each of the candidates have personally witnessed. And we didn't know if we would find that. But what we found was every single candidate had seen the impacts of climate change up close, you know, flooding in Vermont, the wildfires, the storms, you name it. And then we went through their record. What are they touting as their accomplishments? And also, what are they not talking about that voters would want to know if they are making their decision on this? I think voters who care about climate change are very interested in whether the candidates are accepting donations from fossil fuel companies. All of the Democrats ultimately took a pledge not to accept fossil fuel funding, although some of them have taken money from executives and investors who have ties to fossil fuel companies. I think it's important, again, to compare that to the Republican side, which is getting about 90% and more of the fossil fuel industry funding.
And Brett, for this scorecard, can you tell us how you went about doing this? We should say that Tom Steyer and Pete Buttigieg have dropped out of the race. According to your scorecard, Tom Steyer had a B, Pete Buttigieg had a C minus. And then some of the other grades, Bernie Sanders is at the top with an A, followed by Elizabeth Warren, A minus. You just did Michael Bloomberg. He's got a B minus. Joe Biden has a C plus. Amy Klobuchar has a D. So how did you go about doing this? It's pretty extensive.
Sure. So, you know, we looked at a couple things, and I think, you know, the way we approach this is, one, what have you done in the past? You know, the candidates have different biographies and histories, but what were your past actions in office? You know, what bills did you introduce? What bills did you vote for? But also, what are your actual plans? Many of the candidates have detailed plans on their websites that lay out what they're going to do. And we put special attention and emphasis into what actions would you take as president using executive authority in particular, because, you know, not to be pessimistic, but it's still very unlikely, given Mitch McConnell being in the Senate, even if they reach the Democrats take back the Senate, that you're going to see really big legislative efforts. So are you going to be very, you know, bold and proactive from day one to address the climate crisis, to address public lands, to address wildlife? Because waiting for Congress or trying to make a deal, I think, is somewhat naive and unrealistic, given how completely partisan the Republicans have become on issues like the environment, which is unfortunate. So we looked at that. We, you know, we sent the candidates questionnaires as well. We tried to bring in as much relevant information to come up with the grades. And that's how it all shakes out.
So let's go over all of this. At the very top of the list is Senator Bernie Sanders. And you looked at four issues: wildlife, public lands, environmental justice, and climate. And Bernie Sanders' overall grade is an A. And you write that he has demonstrated a strong environmental record throughout his career, including having proposed the strongest plan to address climate change and being an original co-sponsor of the Green New Deal. He also voted over the years to protect wildlife and public lands and has consistently opposed legislation that exempted the wall from complying with U.S. environmental laws. So first off, wildlife, Bernie Sanders got a B+. What did you find there?
Sure. So on wildlife, I'll admit we gave all the candidates a really tough review because, you know, I'm sure everyone saw the devastating wildfires in Australia. There was a report by the United Nations in May of last year that said 1 million species are at risk of extinction in the next few decades, due not only to climate change, but to habitat destruction and simply the unsustainable way that we are sort of living on the planet. That should be a stark alarm and warning to everyone that we face a massive extinction crisis that's reshaping the planet. So what we want to see on wildlife is really strong plans that also address this. And frankly, the candidates haven't quite stepped up yet. I'll note that Mayor Bloomberg just put out his plan today for public lands that recognizes the extinction crisis. It gives a shout out right at the beginning, and that's great. So we want to see all the candidates do that. Bernie gets a B+ because he has been generally a really good partner on wildlife issues. He hasn't voted the wrong way. The Green New Deal that he's proposing would be the biggest infusion into sort of a renewable economy of any of the candidates and one of the most sweeping and ambitious plans we've seen. So given his record and given his sort of approach to climate change, he gets a good grade on wildlife, but not an A, because he still hasn't elevated those concerns to the highest level.
In fact, no one got an A. You gave Joe Biden a C-, Amy Klobuchar an F, Elizabeth Warren a B, and Bloomberg got a B on wildlife since that info came out. Okay.
That's right. So, and just to note that, you know, one of the reasons we gave Joe Biden a bad grade and in particular was he has, over the years, unfortunately, taken positions that sort of were politically expedient sort of compromises that undercut endangered species. And this was even true when he was vice president. But the Obama administration did not really prioritize wildlife conservation. They attacked critical habitat for endangered species. And his plans are virtually silent on this issue. Hmm. He doesn't talk about wildlife in any of his plans, and that's why he does pretty poorly.
Hmm. And Marianne, you have written about Bernie Sanders pointing out that the youth-led activist group, the Sunrise Movement, they're huge champions of the Green New Deal. This is the group that protests politicians. They have endorsed Bernie Sanders. What really stands out for you when it comes to Sanders' environmental record and platform?
Right. When you look at the difference between Bernie Sanders and Biden, and let's say him and the moderates. What we're looking at as one of the biggest differences is the speed with which he wants to phase out fossil fuels, including banning fracking. That is a very, very much a division line in the Democratic Party. Are you for or against banning fracking? Do you see fracking as something that can continue in the short term, or will have to as we transition? I think that in this whole discussion, though, it has to also be said how far Biden's plan is from the Obama plans. I mean, Obama was talking about, you almost needed a calculator to get out to derive what his goals were in the Paris Climate Accord. And he talked about at the end, 80% carbon emissions cuts by 2050. Biden is talking about zero. He is talking about an investment that is 30 times what Hillary Clinton sought 4 years ago.
Wow.
Now, of course, Bernie Sanders' investment would be 10 times what Biden's is. The question that none of the Democrats have so far had to answer, which I think is the most important question, is how do you create a durable climate policy, that one that will not be dismantled the way Obama's climate policy is being dismantled right now? How do you deal with the problem that Brett talked about, the intransigence of the Republican Party? Is there a way to get a strong majority for climate action? And how would you do it?
Well, that is an important question, Brett, because some of the Republicans who actually wanted to do work on the climate crisis lost their races. So what about that question Marianne raises?
It's a great question. I think if you had the answer to that, we would be in a very different place. I think, honestly, my answer is that in order to create enough pressure to bring all the parties together, the next president has to immediately take big actions on the climate from day one. And I want to say that what we hear from all the candidates, and it's good, it's positive, is, we'll rejoin the Paris Accord only when I become president. Great. But there's more to be done than just that. And I think, frankly, the biggest mistake of the Obama administration was waiting until year 5 and 6 to really use the EPA to make change. Mm. If the next president were to, as we advocate for, declaring a national emergency on day one, so using the full powers of the National Emergencies Act, you can immediately ban the export of fossil fuels. You can immediately take action to end all new leasing on public lands and waters of fossil fuels. You can order the EPA immediately to enact incredibly tough rules that address carbon pollution and other greenhouse gas pollution like methane. That might create enough pressure to bring the intransigent side to the table and see if they can work it out. But I think you have to go from the assumption of there's no time to lose. If the science is right, and it almost certainly is, we have one decade, 2030, to cut our emissions by half. If we had any chance of hitting a sort of net zero goal by 2050, because otherwise the curve is too steep. So if you come in and are really bold immediately, then at least there's a space for a dialogue. And my concern is that if you don't do that, then the Republican side will just sort of say, well, maybe they're not really serious after all, and not offer real solutions as well.
Brett Hartle is Government Affairs Director at the Center for Biological Diversity Action Fund, and they are out with a scorecard on the candidates' environmental records and platforms. You've got Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren at the top with A's. Joe Biden has a C+. Bloomberg's just came out again. Remind me, Brett.
It's a B overall.
A B.
We'll have the page. The website will be updated within the hour.
Okay, thank you. So Bloomberg's got a B, and Amy Klobuchar has a D. We're also joined by Marianne Lavelle, an award-winning journalist for Inside Climate News, where she writes extensively about these issues. And if you have any questions about where the candidates stand on the climate crisis and environmental issues, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org or tweet us at yourcallradio. Let's hear from Ruthann and El Cerrito. Hi, Ruthann. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. I wanted to ask the guests if any of the candidates have addressed the issue of environmental justice, i.e. that polluting industries and plants end up, like Chevron in Richmond, in communities that are low income, and so that those folks get disproportionately impacted by the effects of the climate-producing industry.
Thank you, Ruthann. Brett, that was one of the key issues
in
the scorecard. So how did the candidates do on environmental justice?
Yeah, so the good news is that almost all of them are addressing it in a serious way. There was a forum on environmental justice that many candidates attended. Senator Sanders, Senator Warren are at the top with A's. They have the most aggressive plans that sort of integrate environmental justice into basically all aspects of the federal government's activities. The other candidates are not far behind, though, with the exception of Amy Klobuchar. Many of the candidates are really taking it seriously. It's very heartening to see. It's another one of those issues where what we really need is, day one executive action. This is well within the president's power, and they can order all of the agencies to immediately change their decision-making process, at least federally, to consider environmental justice right from the get-go. There's nothing would stop them if they were to do that. So it is encouraging. I would just say, come check out our scorecard. We have narrative discussions for every candidate. We look at things like the border wall, Native American issues as well. But it's very heartening because the candidates have been stepping up.
Right. And you point out, you've got specifics. In 2019, Bernie Sanders introduced the Water Act as part of the Green New Deal, a bill that would dedicate $35 billion for water systems for rural or low-income communities. NPR had a great piece about an area in South Carolina that is drinking bottled water because they cannot drink out of the tap, and that always deserves more attention. You mentioned Amy Klobuchar. She got a D on environmental justice. You write that she did not take part in the Forum on Environmental Justice in November, and she failed to co-sponsor the Environmental Justice Act in 2007, 2008, 2017, and 2019.
Yeah, and, we have a lot of concerns with Amy Klobuchar. One example that I think illustrates this and ties back to environmental justice is that she has several times introduced legislation that would overturn a judicial decision where a court has ruled, the D.C. Circuit, the second highest court in the land, ruled that the delisting of gray wolves was invalid. And you say, well, what does that have to do with environmental justice? Well, if you introduce legislation that says you can't have judicial review, as a citizen, the courts are often your only recourse when an environmental injustice occurs. You have to go to court to fight them. She has introduced legislation that would rubber stamp mines in Minnesota, which would harm water quality in Lake Superior if they were to have a problem, and almost every mine does. And that's extremely concerning to us because the most vulnerable communities in this country, the only chance that they're really going to have to bring their concerns to light is to go to court. And if you have a candidate that is willing to short-circuit the judicial process because it's expedient, that's deeply troubling. So she hasn't signaled in any real way that this is a high priority for her. And her track record, unfortunately, speaks words about what she would potentially do as president. Mm-hmm.
Brett Hartle is Government Affairs Director at the Center for Biological Diversity Action Fund. Marianne Lavelle is an award-winning journalist for Inside Climate News. And Marianne, we're going to take a quick break, but I'd love to hear your thoughts about environmental justice right after. Today, it is your call, and we are talking about the candidates' records on the environment and the climate crisis. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, tomorrow is Super Tuesday, and we will be talking about Get Out the Vote efforts. According to the Pew Research Center, a record 32 million Latinos are projected to be eligible to vote this year. We'll also talk about young people, a group that doesn't typically vote in large numbers, so we'll be finding out if that might change tomorrow. And then on Wednesday, we will talk about the results. Today, we are talking about where the candidates stand on environmental issues and the climate crisis. And if you have any questions for our guests about this, you can join us at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Today, we're joined by Brett Hartle, Government Affairs Director at the Center for Biological Diversity Action Fund. They have a scorecard out where the candidates stand on crucial issues. Marianne Lavelle is an award-winning journalist for Inside Climate News. Marianne, what would you add? What stands out for you when you look at where the candidates stand on environmental justice issues?
Yes, it's interesting. Your caller mentioned Richmond in California, which is just such a great example of how anything that we do to reduce our dependence on fossil fuels will help reduce the burden on those communities. What stands out for me is how the candidates are looking at kind of wide lens at this, for instance, how housing policy can be part of one of the tools to attacking climate change, and where housing is located, and making sure housing is safe and efficient and energy efficient. Another thing that all of the candidates have talked about, but I think Biden and Sanders have talked about this very strongly, about partnering with the farm community, because farm families, they get hit by the flooding, and it's just an economic damage to them. And instead of the farm community feeling that it is tied to fossil fuels, find a way that farms can benefit from investments in things like methane digesters and other things to capture carbon and really make their operations carbon neutral, and they can really earn income from that. I think all of the candidates have realized the connection between economics and the environment in their plans.
Well, thanks again for calling in, Ruth Ann. Let's go next to Greg in Palo Alto. Hi, Greg. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you. I have not watched, I've had a disclaimer right at the beginning of this, I have not watched every minute of every debate or every forum or followed every candidate as closely as I might. But I have to say this, there's a complete disconnect, it seems to me, between, say, even Sanders, okay, mostly Sanders, and the Democratic Party. Nancy Pelosi wouldn't even allow a debate on the environment. So that tells you something about the Democratic Party. Even if Bernie Sanders gets elected, or if he gets nominated, he's going to have to fight with these people in the Democratic Party to try and accomplish anything on the environment. And I'll say one thing about the debates that I did watch. Like I said, I didn't see everything, so I don't know what Biden had to say or what other people did. But every time that Bernie Sanders was talking, he always tried to get in, no matter what the question was, he always tried to get in a message about the environment, about environmental justice. He was always trying to get that in. He really irritated the moderators by doing this, But, you know, he tried his best to try and get this in. And this national conversation that needs to take place on the environment, which is the biggest issue facing humankind at this point, we still haven't had it. Sanders is trying, and so are the other people, but he's going to have to deal with a lot of people, even if he can get the nomination, which is still a big if. So, I don't know. I just see a fundamental disconnect within the party, and I think that what's going to happen, even if Sanders gets the nomination, there's going to have to be millions of people forcing the Democrats to really take this thing seriously.
Well, who would like to take that one? Marianne?
You know, what it reminds me of is people often forget that one of the roadblocks that the Obama administration faced early on was in the Senate. Even when the Democrats had control of the Senate, there was this block of Democrats from industrial states who just did not want to take the vote on what was then a cap and trade bill. There is division in the Democratic Party. It hasn't come to the fore because the Republicans have been so effective in blocking any debate or discussion on climate. But I think that there has to be some sort of solution, if there's going to be a solution, certainly a legislative solution. It will have to somehow bring in those industrial states and their representatives. And to be fair, I think that that is kind of what the Green New Deal is supposed to be about, is linking economic development and a massive federal public works policy with climate policy. I'm not sure politically if it is really done the trick. And I think we're still struggling for a way to bring together the country on the urgency of acting on climate and, to use what Biden has called it, is making this a great crisis, a great opportunity.
Anything to add, Brett?
Yeah, I mean, I would just say that, you know, Congress is always tough, even under the best of circumstances. And it's true, there's a huge divide in the Democratic Party about the future of oil and gas and how much and how fast we can crack down on it. If you follow the science, you know, we have only a decade to see about a 50% reduction. That seems pretty hard to square with the establishment wing of the party when it comes to their position. I think that's why we look so much at the executive actions, because it is unrealistic to see legislation, unfortunately. And the good news is that the president has enormous power, and if they use all of their power, they can enact significant changes that in some ways can bypass Congress. Now, obviously, that makes it a little bit more likely that you end up in court and go back and forth. And I'll just say, though, from a more political perspective, we have endorsed Jessica Cisneros in Texas. She is running a primary against Henry Cuellar, who's one of the most industry-friendly Democrats in the House right now. And I think the answer is we have to hold people accountable when they are putting the fossil fuel industry ahead of their own constituents. That's a problem, and the only real solution is to vote.
Well, and to Greg's point, Nancy Pelosi endorsed her challenger, Henry Cuellar. Is that how you say it?
Cuellar, yeah.
So you've got people like Pelosi endorsing him, whereas the progressive wing is endorsing Cisneros?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's the fight we have, which is, you know, are these very centrist Democrats, you know, there's definitely downsides to having them in Congress. Yes, you want to be in the majority, but if your own members thwart progress, you get in this terrible stalemated position, and then nothing happens. And we see that all the time, especially in this climate arena. So, you know, it's tough, but we think it's important to have the right people in Congress.
Well, let's spend some time talking about Elizabeth Warren, because once again, she's not really getting much media attention. I was watching the cable shows and listening to things over the weekend when Buttigieg dropped out. And then after Biden won in South Carolina, most of the attention was on Buttigieg and Biden over the weekend. I hardly heard Elizabeth Warren's name even mentioned. So she got an overall grade of an A minus, wildlife B, public lands A minus, environmental justice A, climate A minus. As you point out in the scorecard, Brett, Elizabeth Warren has a strong record supporting wildlife, public lands, and the environment. She was one of the first candidates to sign the No Fossil Fuel Pledge, and her climate plan recognizes the urgency of the crisis by dedicating trillions of dollars to achieve net zero emissions by 2030. What really stands out for you?
I mean, I think Elizabeth Warren is great. I mean, you know, we're not obviously officially endorsing anyone. I think she puts enormous thought into all of her plans on all topics, and you know, she has put out really good plans for the environment as well. I don't have any major critique. Her plans are slightly less ambitious than Senator Sanders, and that's why she gets an overall A minus compared to him getting an A. So, for example, in the climate arena, we actually feel strongly that transitioning the power sector out of sort of a profit-making enterprise and restoring it to more of a publicly owned utility model where profit is not part of it, the equation is really critical, because oftentimes it's the profit motive that is causing the big power generators to embrace fossil fuels. She does not do that, and that's fine. I mean, you know, we can always disagree. She gets a slightly lower score. She's got some really innovative plans. So, for example, she came out with her Blue New Deal, which is sort of an oceans equivalent for the Green New Deal. She's been great on environmental justice, very solid on public lands. I mean, you know, they are in some ways very similar, and her plans are really good. So I don't have any, like, you know, terrible critiques. She's been a great champion of the environment as well, and it's unfortunate that she's not getting more recognition and airtime, because her ideas are very well thought through.
Yeah, she's one of the only candidates that's spending some time talking about the oceans.
Yeah, I mean, you know, sometimes they get taken for granted, even though they actually take up more area than our actual land mass. And if you think about it from a climate perspective, and even as recently as the BP Deepwater Horizon disaster, how we manage our oceans, which are one, they're harmed tremendously by climate change from acidification and warming temperatures, but also just the fact that there's huge stores of oil in the Arctic, in the Atlantic, and the Gulf, that industry is still, you know, eyeing and hoping to tap into. We really need to think about the oceans, because they are integral to a sound climate policy.
Right.
Plus, the oceans are what are protecting us right now. They're absorbing all the so much of the carbon and heat. And really, they, you know, I absolutely agree. They are integral. One other thing I would mention about Warren is she kind of brings her experience in financial consumer affairs to her climate plan, and she talks about disclosure requirements for the fossil fuel industry, disclosing of climate risks in their portfolios, and I think that also is really unique about hers. She very close to Bernie Sanders. She actually adopted almost all of Governor Jay Inslee's very strong climate platform as well. And you're right, she hasn't gotten as much attention because Sanders has kind of dominated that lane of the Democratic Party.
And we just got some breaking news that Amy Klobuchar just dropped out of the race.
She must have heard you, Brett.
Well, I mean, it's so interesting, though, Brett, about Amy, because, I mean, unfortunately, we just when you're talking about issues on the cable shows, you know, the details don't really come up. It's who's ahead, who's behind. And it was so interesting to read your card. I mean, I learned a lot about Amy Klobuchar that I did not know.
Yeah, I mean, I've worked in D.C. for many years, and it was actually very alarming when she ran for president from my perspective, because her positions are actually quite weak on the environment, and they do encapsulate that sort of dilemma about those Midwestern moderate Dems that often, undervalue the environment when it comes to how they approach policymaking. So, we did our best to provide education on her, because it is hard to talk about the details. Obviously, all the candidates are eons beyond where we are with Donald Trump and are so much better that, you know, I'm not trying to make them similar, but it is important to recognize we have so little time left when it comes to fighting the climate crisis and dealing with, you know, the extinction crisis, that, like, we can't have the wrong policies being put in place by the next president. We just don't have the time.
Well, it's very interesting. Now that Pete Buttigieg is out and Amy Klobuchar is out, I've read some stories about top wealthy Democrats really putting pressure on them to drop out so people could coalesce behind Joe Biden. So let's talk about Biden. Biden got an overall grade of C+, wildlife C-, public lands B, environmental justice B, climate C-. And before we dive in, can you talk to us, Brett, and then Marianne, about the role he played when it came to President Obama's all of the above energy strategy, which got a lot of criticism from environmental activists? He talked about major oil exploration under his tenure, and then his strategy also resulted in the largest expansion in natural gas production in history.
Well, I mean, I'll just say this. I think the way we've looked at Vice President Biden is, it's obvious from anyone that watches him on the campaign trail, is that he tries to take credit for all things that were good under the Obama administration and walks away from most of the things that were bad. And I think that's sort of unfair. It's hard to exactly say who did what and when as vice president and whose fingerprints were on which particular activities. But he has to take accountability for the things that happened under the Obama administration that weren't so rosy, which included the biggest oil spill in our history, the biggest expansion of natural gas in our history. He has to, you know, be somewhat responsible for it. I don't want to say he was, you know, the leading charge, but he certainly was involved in those big picture decisions. You know, the Obama administration's strategy of getting out of the Great Recession was to expand oil and gas production. That was the way out, and he was part of that. And I think it's really important, maybe more importantly looking forward, to recognize that a lot of his plans and actions are sort of premised on, I'll restore what President Obama did, and that's true for the environment as well. And that really is not sufficient. We've lost too much time, we've lost too much ground with Donald Trump, and his sort of vision and overarching plans really need to get far beyond where we were in the last president and look at the science honestly and do what is needed.
Marianne, what would you add?
Yeah, the story of the Obama administration, and some would say the tragedy of the Obama administration when it comes to climate, is it tried so hard to find a middle ground in an era when there was no middle ground to be had politically, but also possibly on climate, that wasn't what the times called for, and it was always trying to compromise. I'm sure Brett is familiar with the efforts on endangered species in the West, trying to eke out some sort of compromise to make everyone give everyone a little bit, and in the end making nobody happy, and the same with the fossil fuel development. And Biden, whether he takes credit for it or not, he is bringing that legacy with him into this presidential campaign. And the questions that the Democratic Party, that he's hearing in the Democratic primary, have to do with, is he serious about going far much further than the Obama administration did in phasing out fossil fuels. I will say that he has moved, at least in rhetoric, far beyond where Obama was, and I think it shows that the activists have really, really pushed him as well as the rest of the candidates to the new realities, because we're much further in crisis than we were then, and we just can't we can't go back to the Obama administration goals and figure that that is going to be enough.
So with Biden, we have a long record. And then, as you note in the scorecard, Brett, we have information that he's either said on the campaign trail or from his website. And when it comes to wildlife, you point out that he failed to support the 1993 amendments to the Endangered Species Act. And on his website, there's no information regarding the protection of species or the extinction crisis.
Yeah, and I think it's right. I mean, you know, obviously, campaigns have to choose how to prioritize putting out new plans versus other activities. We haven't seen a lot in terms of policy ideas from his campaign since the sort of the launch. Like, his pages on climate are pretty static. Even Bloomberg, to his credit, I mean, they're putting out new plans every week. There's more on there. There's more detail. That's true for Warren and Sanders as well. It just hasn't been a priority, and obviously that makes us nervous. You know, obviously we care very deeply about all the environmental issues, and, you know, there's no time for complacency. The next president has to immediately do things as soon as they get into office, and that includes, you know, they should have an EPA administrator in there on day one. They should have a Secretary of Interior there on day one, because there's so much, even just to undo what Trump has done, we just can't be complacent, and that's sort of the vibe you get when you look at how the Biden campaign is approaching the environment.
Hmm. Marianne, what else would you add in terms of the changes that Biden has embraced when it comes to the climate crisis?
Yeah, you know, the thing that really struck me Saturday night after he won in South Carolina so big, his speech was very, very carefully structured to be a speech for everybody. He was really speaking to the nation and making the case for his presidency. And when he talked about climate change, he talked about what he wanted to mobilize the world against climate change. So the way he frames it and the way he will be framing it is that he has the foreign policy experience, and that he was involved in, you know, the administration that brought us the Paris Accord and the agreement with China that also was very important. And I know that certainly the Paris Accord is not enough. It is not it's not a cure-all at all. But the thing about the Paris Accord that it's often not understood or really appreciated is that it got every single country to agree to do something, and it created a process that was meant to constantly ratchet up ambition. It is a process, not a final goal. And I think it often is not appreciated what a huge accomplishment that was, because for so long there was such a division among rich and poor countries over climate that we could not get anywhere. And it is just, again, very tragic what has been frittered away over the last 3.5 years. But I think having someone who can, you know, forge an international agreement, that's a pretty important thing as we move ahead.
Hmm. Well, final thoughts from both of you. We now have four candidates running. We have Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, Joe Biden, and Michael Bloomberg. If you're just tuning in, Amy Klobuchar just dropped out of the race. And unfortunately, if you've already voted, you can't change your vote. A lot of people in California said, wait a minute, I voted for Buttigieg and I want my vote back to vote for someone else. And unfortunately, you cannot do that. So what are your thoughts, Brett, with these four candidates now?
Well, I think my main thought is we still have time. We'll see how this race develops. But to the extent that people can, we should continue pushing all the candidates to do more. I think I was struck by what Marianne said about Paris Accords, and that's totally right, that we have to do everything we can to fight the climate crisis. No one thing is going to solve this problem. And the harder we push all of the candidates to have strong plans, the more likely we are to succeed. So, to hold the candidates accountable to what they're promising, to make them promise more if you happen to get to see them and talk to them in person at an event, that's really critical because there still is time to get this right.
Marianne, final thoughts?
This also harkens back to something Brett said. It's important that whoever is elected realizes that this has to be a priority from day one. And that, again, was something, climate was kind of deprioritized in the beginning of the Obama administration, and that was a real, real lost opportunity. And so if you're active on climate, it can't just end in November. It has to go beyond that, whoever wins.
Marianne Lavelle is an award-winning journalist for Inside Climate News, and Brett Hartle is Government Affairs Director at the Center for Biological Diversity Action Fund. Marianne and Brett, thank you so much for your work, and thank you for joining us.
Glad to be here.
Thank you. You can find Marianne's articles about where candidates stand on the environment, and you can find the Center for Biological Diversity Action Fund scorecard at yourcallradio.org. We now have just four candidates on the ballot: Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, Joe Biden, and Michael Bloomberg. Coming up tomorrow, we will talk about Get Out the Vote efforts. Thanks to Malihe Razazan for producing today's show. And thanks to Jonathan Linden, our intern, Joanne Marr, our studio engineer. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.